What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
All right, here we go. You'll know when I'm coming to you, okay? I seriously had really no idea how to start this intro. I met Rory Gardner on set at CTV Morning Live and interviewed him about his country music career. A few years later, it's awesome to see that it's going well, even receiving a 2018 CCMA nomination. He has toured worldwide and recorded songs in Nashville and even opened up for Keith Urban. I've also seen him on several stages just here doing the local fundraisers. So let's check off musician. And then we can actually talk about the fact that when he opens his mouth to talk, not only can he sing, but he actually runs off a few jokes. So you can add comedian into the mix as well. And not just the class clown, like real jokes, like with funny punchlines. He's actually really funny. Performing at comedy clubs all over North America and chilling with Canadian comics like Tom Green and Mike McDonald. But the turning point for me asking Rory to come on the podcast was his experience as a TEDx speaker, talking about humor as a coping mechanism. For my listeners here in Ottawa, we remember last year's 6 tornadoes hitting down in one powerful storm. The images are still incredibly fresh in our minds. People here continue to rebuild their lives and rebuild their homes. Rory and his family were one of the family's hardest hit, running to safety only to see their home destroyed. What followed was a series of really funny videos that went viral as Rory used humor to explain and show the devastation. I'll be honest, I just watched them and I cracked up laughing. And what a gift to see a different way of handling the most difficult of situations. This podcast will have a little of everything, including the tree in his house, which he sees now as the perfect treehouse. So welcome to Living Your Life with Leanne Lang, the podcast brought to you by Extension Marketing. And of course, as always, for more information, you can head to extensionmarketing.com. Rory, great to see you again.
Great to see you.
It's funny because we ran into each other at fundraiser. And it was one of those, hey, what's happening? How you been? What's up? And I had no clue of the experience that you had actually been through, even though I probably should have seen it at the time on social media.
Well, it was a year ago. It's old news now. So everyone's overcome it. They've passed it. So here we are again.
It's old news because it passed and it hit. But it's been, I would think then, not as old news for you as you've continued to see massive changes in your life and the rebuild of what had happened with your home.
In the neighborhood, I mean, the neighborhood doesn't look anything like it did before it got hit with the tornado, but it's now we're seeing the progression of what's come. So we'd moved out for about 8 months while our house got rebuilt and structurally resound. But now over the summer, you see other people's houses with new facelifts or brand new houses altogether. I mean, the neighborhood still looks like garbage. I mean, no one has a lawn or anything like that. The exterior of everyone's house basically looks like it got hit with a tornado.
It did.
Oh, that's probably this could be that.
It did. Okay, so I want to hit on because I knew you all these years as a musician, right? I had no idea of the backstory of everything, so it's great to be able to see that there's been movement there. But let me kind of lay the groundwork because when we chatted, you were performing at a fundraiser for mental health, and. You know, my original thing was, okay, ask about the music, see how things are going. So is it interesting now that there is this story to you that is very different from the story that you had of being this musician and being this comedian, but now you have this packaged story that I think is inspiring so many people?
It's added a layer. It's added authenticity to what I do. So, let's say I've been doing comedy for about 7 years now, and I'd make a room laugh, you know, everyone's got jokes about this and that and airlines and stuff like that. But then as soon as I started telling stories about what happened in real life, this is how I overcame surviving a natural disaster. It's like the room goes quiet and you have their undivided attention. So you can say anything and they're right on top of every word. So if you add humor to that mix, then you've got them.
I watched the TEDx talk and it seemed like that. The room was just silent and then it would be silent listening to the stories and then erupting with laughter when you had the punchline. Can you take us through? I'm going to hopefully have people look and after they hear this or as they're listening to this, they're going to go on YouTube and check out the videos because they're actually really quite funny. But in the moment, can you explain what happened, where you were? Take us through, if you don't mind, the events of that day.
Of the actual tornado?
Of the actual tornado, yeah. Because you were at home.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to tell the exaggerated part in the TEDx, but I'll tell you again right now. It's we're in the living room with, you know, with the kids and...
Two kids.
I own two children. And two boys. One's seven, one's just turned five.
Okay.
And we're having a pizza and we're getting the tornado warnings on our phone, but we're ignoring them because tornadoes don't come to Ottawa. They just, you know, it would never happen. All of a sudden, we see trees being uprooted in the front yard through the window. My neighbor's pool lands in the yard. And,
okay, sorry, your neighbor's pool.
It was more like a kiddie pool.
Okay.
It's not like a...
Well, it wasn't uprooted from the in-ground pool, but okay, an above-ground pool.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so that's when we started to panic, and that's when I grabbed my favorite kid, and we headed down to the basement, and then we can hear crashing, the roof flies off, and see the swing set disappear, but the kids didn't care because now they have a new pool.
They saw that the new pool had landed in the front yard.
They're excited, so
right.
They weren't even thinking about the wind at the time.
No.
Yeah.
While you're bringing humor to this situation already, when you start to see or hear or feel, a lot of people talk about it. It was almost like a freight train coming at you. Was that like the sound and the pressure? Like
everything was slow motion. So it was slow motion. As we're running to the basement stairs, you can see in your peripherals, again, trees being uprooted. You can see windows started to crash. Tree fell on the hot tub, so you just big splash of water. And so all happening in slow motion as if you're in a movie. And then all of a sudden, you're in the basement. 20 seconds later, it was finished. And we popped our heads up in blue skies and birds in our kitchen.
20 seconds, that was it.
Yeah, it was quick.
It was that quick. Mm-hmm. Do you think about what it would have been like had you not been able to get from the living room down into the basement?
The path, I think we would have been fine because that part of the house wasn't destroyed. Other parts were. Like, let's say the tornado hit at about 5 o'clock at night, but if it had happened overnight while we were sleeping, we wouldn't be here today. Because the upstairs was that's where all the trees hit.
And they came crashing through.
Yes.
You walk out 20, 30 seconds after this whirlwind, grab your favorite kid, as you mentioned, run down into the basement, 20 seconds.
Let's hope the other kid doesn't ever see this.
I know. Well, I think it's been quite evident, I think, as part of the humor side of you.
Let's hope they don't remember which kid I grabbed so they don't.
I think that's probably the best way to explain it. Which one of us was with that? You come back up. What is your first thought? Coming, you know, opening the basement door and seeing what?
I mean, I got to get a bigger mop. It's... Like Arlington Woods, you're aware of it. It's all trees. So in Dunrobin, which is another place the tornado hit, they don't really have a lot of trees. And so the tornado would just take the houses away. The trees actually masked the wind that was coming through our neighborhood. But again, the trees fell on the houses. So you only had 20 trees in the lot. So when we opened the door, for the first time, we saw actual natural light. So we didn't need wind shades or blinds or anything like that before because it was just a big forest. And for the first time, like we literally saw the sun. It was a neat feeling, but at the same time, it was like, wow, this is different. And then traveling through the neighborhood for the next several weeks, it was like unrecognizable. Like, you know, when you're going through your normal route and then it's like, was that there? Oh.
So I grew up right around the corner from Arlington Woods. Mm-hmm. And so I knew the streets really quite well. I knew where my friends' houses were. I'd bike the paths. I'd walk the neighborhood so many times. And driving through, I did not recognize the homes because I recognized the trees of the homes before I recognized the homes. Plus, they were always so well hidden because the trees were so big, and sometimes the leaves and the foliage would cover, mm-hmm. you know, a bedroom window or something. So I didn't recognize whose house was whose based on the fact that there were no trees as the starting point. It was really devastating to see, even for the weeks and the months that actually the rebuild was starting, and it was almost like, which ones are complete write-offs and which ones are we going to actually rebuild? So you, in the way you describe things and in the videos that followed, there was you calling the hot tub company.
Yeah.
There was you changing the car from a midsize to a compact.
Right.
You know, what made you decide, or was it just the natural way of coping for you to bring humor into the situation?
Both. So as a creative person doing anything that's ever good or bad that's ever happened in my life, it's always been translated into a song or a joke. It's just the way I've conditioned myself as a writer. And in this particular case, joke. So the year prior is when I was doing a lot of YouTube videos. I write sketches, and then I'd have a green screen set up, which is no longer – that's where the tree completely destroyed the studio. So there's been no green screen videos since. But again, I conditioned myself to make these funny videos. And the day after, everyone's panicking. We're all trying to find contractors, but no one's coming because they're pretty bogged down with all. So to kill time, we just grabbed the phone and made some jokes just to make the neighbors laugh. I didn't realize it would hit 10,000 views in 24 hours.
So it was just to have humor amongst you guys.
Yeah, yeah, it's instinctual, and we didn't think anything of it at the time. It's just, why not laugh?
When you started to see, though, that people were connecting with these videos, that they were watching them, they were enjoying the humor.
No one watched any of the videos before this one.
now they started to, though.
Yes,
so what was it like to see the reaction that people wanted to see more of what you were providing?
It was more of, again, I think there's no overnight success, right? It's you're just building whatever that is over time, and then all of a sudden something hits, and oh, this guy does this, so let's absorb everything else he's created.
The jokes are funny, but the topic matter is still serious. So as you're making a joke over the fact that the hot tub company needs to come and fix the hot tub, which really pretty much doesn't even exist anymore, right? Or that your son has always wanted a tree house, and well, he's got the perfect tree house in the middle of the bedroom, and there's a tree in the room. Is there fear of what's next? How are we going to do this? The financial burden of it, the displacement of it. Where are you putting the emotions?
There's a threshold. So let's say you, I don't know, the power goes out. Well, that's an inconvenience, and now you're kind of pissed. But when everyone's power is out and you have a Volvo in your living room, it's beyond that point of inconvenience. Now it's like you don't know how to react emotionally. So we just smiled. Like, is this really happening right now? And I can't, you know, never in a million years did I ever think that I would live in a real treehouse. So it was just mind-boggling, and it's just how we coped with it. A lot of the people didn't cope the same way, but
well, no, I would think for some people there's, you know, you have relationships, you have money, you have different burdens, there's different fears that would occur in a situation like this. You talk about the power going out for the rest of the city. It was just the inconvenience of having no power for some of us, four or five days.
Well, the tornado itself was an inconvenience. Like 20 minutes before it happened, I just vacuumed. And now there's just a giant mess. So I don't, like, it's a waste of time as far as I'm concerned.
Veronica's laughing right now because I actually laughed a lot when you were doing the TEDx, that comment, right? I had just vacuumed. I had just vacuumed the house, and then this tornado comes through. But we all feel like that, right? When we put time and effort into something in the home or having to fix something. I mean, you didn't have to fix anything. There's no more lawnmower to mow the lawn. Right. I mean, those responsibilities were like, I don't have to do those anymore.
But all the jokes are derived from something that really happened. Like, no joke, no word of a lie, I had just gotten an oil change in the car, just filled it up with gas, and then now it's a pancake. So, like, you know, had I waited a week, then I would have saved a few. A neighbor a few houses down, he had just gotten his roof replaced. It cost $15,000 or something like that. And then his house got destroyed. Had he waited 2 weeks, he would have got a free roof. So I don't know. It's just the way Mother Nature works. I think she was targeting houses that didn't recycle.
Do you think that was it?
No, I don't know.
Do you guys recycle?
Yeah.
Do you look at things different? Do you look at the power of Mother Nature differently?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... Again, we're so sheltered in Ottawa. Like, nothing ever happens here. And so it was a shock to us all. And then months later, we get flooding and...
Well, you were saying also one of your neighbors moved out of the house because they were going to do a build,
yeah,
rebuild, and rented a house along the water.
And then, yeah, exactly. And then his house is below sea level due to the flooding that happened in the spring. So I don't know what he did to piss off Mother Nature.
There's something there for sure.
He probably set fire to a Tesla.
That was a joke in there. I can see the humor coming out, and I can see how you did this. But you had this reaction, and then you have TEDx reaching out to you. What was it like to put all of that into a storyline? I mean, it was one thing to create videos and have some fun, and they're quick hits and they're a great laugh, but to put this into a story that you can stand on a stage and go from A to Z.
I was kind of learning what it was about myself. So they reached out because they're like, wow, this is a great way to use humor to overcome adversity. And I was like, yeah, I guess you're right. I didn't realize I was doing it at the time. But that's a legitimate thing. Like, humor therapy is actually practiced in healthcare, and like, the laughter stimulates the immune system, reducing the effects of the stress hormone. So what I told people in the TED Talk is that I'm pretty much a doctor.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that way now?
No, but I have a psychiatrist friend who says everything I did in the video is an actual method of oh, what did he call it? Sublimation or something like that, where you're basically sublimating, if you want to, a good reaction with a bad reaction with a good reaction. So instead of panicking, instead of freaking out, instead of turning to alcohol or whatever, make jokes, do something creative. And that's basically taking away the one thing and creating a good habit from it. And you've heard of like post-traumatic stress disorder. Like, they have something called post-traumatic growth, and people actually build off of it and do good things over, you know, from adversity.
Had you gone this way before? I mean, as you said, right, you either make a joke out of it or you make a song out of it.
Nothing this bad has ever happened to me. Like, the worst thing that's happened to me thus far is one time a lady stole my bike in spin class. I mean, it's and so I you don't know how you're going to react in the face of adversity. I just, my instinct was humor.
Is there any part of you that would now turn to a song and write a song about it? Can I ask if one of those is in the making?
Not yet. There's not a lot of tornado hits out there on radio, so.
No, but especially too with country music, mm-hmm, right? Everything's a story. There's always a story behind a song.
The thing about country music is, everything in country music is, I lost my wife, I lost my dog, I lost my house. So I figured.
The truck.
Exactly. The truck. But I thought if I wrote a country music song backwards, I can get it all back.
That totally might have worked.
I know.
But that is so true about the country music. The tree in the yard and the car back in the driveway, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, the roofs on the house back up.
Yeah. You know?
How many times we hear country songs about kind of the love within the home and the home. So a country song might not yet be in the works for it.
I just released a children's album, actually. So I'm working on kids' songs for the last year.
How are your kids as demos, listeners, test subjects for them?
I mean, they're not exactly giving constructive criticism. Mm-hmm. They don't really have that skill yet, but you can tell which ones they like over the other ones. And so I use them as a good platform.
When did you make the switch? I mean, when was it the desire? And I know you've done kids' programs in schools, and I've seen you do, you know, a couple of programs there, but to have the angle of wanting to do songs for children.
It wasn't a decision. It's just where my head is at. So I try to write songs for adults, but my kids are at such an age where all I do is watch Sesame Street and Paw Patrol. And so that's my life right now. So my creativity goes there and I have no choice. I can't wait till it's over.
You can't wait for the episode.
I want to write for adults again. I want to
really, because I can go on. There's some pretty catchy tunes to Baby Einsteins, Little Einsteins. You know, Veronica's looking at me. Trust me, I can hear the music in my head. Oh, the Backyardigans.
Baby Shark.
Oh, there's Baby Shark. Yeah. So, is it the songwriting? Is it the tunes? Is it the wording? Like, what are you writing when you're doing it for the children?
Where am I writing?
Or what's in the thought process?
Is
it teaching lessons? Is it just having something that they can get up and dance in the kitchen or eat their supper to?
A lot of the songs I try to write some sort of a message in each song. I don't think I can't write. I can't be the Wiggles. Like, I'll never be that guy. They were just here in Ottawa, and I can't.
Did you go to see them?
No, but I could never be that. So I'm trying to write songs that that are fun, but also have like an inspiring message. And
can you give us an example? I'm not sure. Some of us have not played the children's music in a little while.
Well, I have one song called Stronger, for example. So it's, you know, the chorus will talk about sometimes we fall, sometimes we blah, blah, blah. But, you know, all these failures just make us a little bit stronger.
Were you thinking of writing these songs a year ago before the tornado hit? Were you already starting to work with children's music?
Well, I have two children's albums already. So this will be my third release next month.
So how quickly have you been putting the children's albums together then?
The first one was 2014.
Okay.
Next one was 2016. And here we are.
The boys were pretty young.
Yeah.
They were very young when that was going on. Mm. So you can really sit there and say that you've got the children that are, and you know, listening to the music. You've got your songs and commercials, which I was able to see too. Do you like the fact that there's a larger spectrum, a broader band of where you have a reach to with music?
The commercial thing was funny. So this is the part okay. I don't like about I like to write songs that are authentic to myself. Maybe it's self-serving, but I just like to write songs that I want to hear and stuff like that. And so in the country music world, I wanted to seek success. So I started to write commercial songs, like songs that everything else was sounded like, and songs that I thought other people wanted to hear. And they sounded so commercial that I actually ended up in commercials, which is an avenue I never thought would happen. And one of them was Kevin Nealon and Arnold Palmer were in this commercial. And it was cool because I was in Kevin Nealon's trailer, had my beat up ice cold drink in my hand. I'm like, this is fantastic. Like, I was watching him on Saturday Night Live when I was a kid. And I was like, do you have any advice for an up and coming entertainer? And he looks at me straight in the eye, says something I'll never forget. He's like, how did you get in here? Like, anyway, so that was a new avenue for music. And to wrap that story up, in 2018, I released an album called Be You, and it was songs exactly what I was talking about, like everything that was songs I wanted to hear, songs about my experiences and things like that. I didn't care what radio thought. I just wrote the songs, and that was the first time I got nominated for a Canadian Country Music Award. So obviously, there is something behind authenticity.
Right. You weren't chasing the radio play. You weren't chasing the advertising dollars. It was, this is what you felt. And what was the writing behind that album? Like, what was happening? What were you feeling to be able to write so authentically? Something that resonated with listeners and with people who can come up with the nominations. This podcast is brought to you by Extension Marketing. They are a new breed of marketing agency that acts as your virtual marketing department, designing and implementing cost-effective marketing strategies that will grow your business. I can speak to this personally, as I've been using the Extension Marketing team to help me launch and grow my business. Founder Pat Whalen has been a lifesaver for me, a genuine coach guiding me along the way into uncharted territory. Tell them you're a friend of the show and receive a free one-hour consultation. Check them out at extensionmarketing.com.
When you're writing authentically, I mean, you have to, there has to be some vulnerability involved. So if I was having a dark day, I would write about that. If I was writing about being a parent, I would write about that, or anything that would come to me that wasn't about pickup trucks, tailgates, and whatever the hell else this country music is nowadays, I would write about. And I think people really like to hear real stories.
So real story, you have real stories that are happening in your life, and yet you're deciding, am I writing a song about this? Do I put a positive, funny spin and write it for stand-up comedy? Where do you get up in the morning and feel what side of you are that day? Am I the songwriter? Am I the comedian? Am I just being dad today? Where do you innately feel like when you're getting up?
The comedy kind of came out of the music. So I'd be playing these shows in theaters, and when you have a captive audience, I couldn't wait for the song to be over so I could tell a joke or tell a story in between the songs. And so it was a sign. So I was like, maybe I should try this a little more often. So years ago, I signed up for this stand-up comedy competition because I knew I couldn't chicken out.
Once you sign up, you gotta go.
Yeah, you're accountable. So I went, and then I lost, but I was hooked. So any funny thought that I have in my mind now, I write it on a piece of paper, and then I try to tell it to people.
Are you more nervous going out on a stage to play or to get out on a stage with people sitting in an audience looking up at you going, make me laugh?
That's the thing about anything you do is, like with music, there was a point where I before every show you'd have butterflies and nerves, and then that went away after a while. And once you've been doing it for 20 years, you can get up, you can sing in front of 100,000 people and not feel a thing. And then when I jumped into the comedy thing, all those feelings came back from when I was a 20-year-old. and it felt really good. It felt good to, because I knew, had gone through it before, that these feelings will, you know, you're going to overcome these. There's going to come a time where you're going to be super confident. And that's when you're going to find your voice and really.
So there was no nerves by the time you're still getting up on a stage playing in front of 100,000 people. There's just an
excitement. That might have been an exaggeration, but yeah.
No, okay. Well, you know, you're opening up for a Keith Urban. That's not many of us can put that down on a resume.
But yes. No. And okay, for sure. There was, I had the jitters before opening up for Keith Urban, but, comparatively, if I had to tell jokes in front of Keith Urban, I probably would have pooped my pants.
Is it a harder audience, though? I mean, I've been in both. I've been a guest at a concert where I'm just looking to let loose and feel really good. And then I've bought a ticket to a comedy club, and I'm sitting in that chair going, I just want to laugh. So do you feel more pressure in one situation than another?
It depends on the room setup. So if you're in a comedy club where you have a captive audience, the room's set up right, it's pretty good. Mm-hmm. But if it's in some other venue where they're not really used to doing comedy, and then you have people talking in the background or over at the bar, it gets hard. You really have to work to gather their attention. And so for a while, sometimes I'll still do it. If it's a venue like that, I'll have my guitar by my side. So if my jokes aren't landing because there's people distracted, then I'll start incorporating the guitar into it. And all of a sudden, so someone starts playing guitar, now you're listening. So I'll do guitar jokes, and it just kind of, it's the way I can best control things is with a guitar.
But the guitar joke started first on the stage doing music, waiting to be able to tell a right. story in between the songs.
Yeah, yeah.
Do the boys know the difference between when you're being serious, when you're able to put a joke in? I'm thinking, going back to a situation where you're going through the devastation of the tornado and they're walking into a room and their house is gone, do they get... Dads are still young, so do they get your humor or the sarcasm, or is there a difference between what they hear you say to other people and what you're telling them?
I don't think they completely grasp sarcasm yet. They take everything pretty on the nose.
Right, so when you're like, look, you have your own treehouse, mm-hmm. it's funny to us, or we appreciate the humor, and yet they're like, okay.
Yeah, but they're not like sitting there Googling my TED Talks either. So it's, you know, they're not seeing everything at this moment.
The TED Talk, what was the reaction afterwards from the people? Were there people in that audience that had been through a situation, or that it resonated a little bit differently with people, or that people are choosing or have messaged to say they're choosing to deal with certain situations differently?
Most of the people watching it weren't affected, and so they really... it resonated with them. A lot of people in the mental health field, people I don't know. I was in St. Catharines doing a show a few weeks ago, and this lady came up, like, I saw your TED Talk. I'm like, oh, that's cool. You're a stranger. And she's like, I work in the mental health field, and our team uses this to show our PTSD trauma patients or something like that. I'm like, that's amazing. And that's happened a few different times with different people in the mental health field. So now I'm thinking, maybe I'm missing an opportunity here. Maybe I should try to speak to some of these people. That's the other cool thing. I've been doing a lot of speaking events from that. It's like they want to hear the story. They want to hear jokes and be entertained, but also inspired.
Are you surprised by that?
Kind of.
And I'm not as surprised maybe as you, because it was so refreshing and so different. And I think we're so looking for answers in different places now that I think you opened up a different avenue people hadn't thought about. Or as you mentioned, I mean, there is humor therapy, but it's not something that most of us are Googling to say, this might be an option.
Yeah, right? People want pharmaceuticals. They don't necessarily want me to go tell them jokes.
But it's even in their own lives, in their own circumstances.
It's everyone's circumstance is different. So a tornado, it was serious. Like, it's a natural disaster. I almost died. So from that stand, it's a very serious topic. But also, it's not a hurricane. It's not a tsunami. During the TED Talk conference, the girl who went on before me was a rape victim. There's different kinds of adversity, and I'm not even going to touch what they went through. But you know, I'm allowed to make fun of my own situation, and I did the best I could with my own adversity.
I can't even imagine what it would have been like to be a guest at that TEDx. The speaker. So you had a woman prior to you speaking who had been raped. What was her story like? Like,
I couldn't listen. I was like, la, 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 la. I was just, it's...
To sit in that audience and to hear, was it all how people dealt with certain adversities?
Yeah.
Like, usually there's a theme, right? Through a lot of the TEDx's.
I don't think everyone's got to have a story, and it really has to hopefully end on an inspiring or positive note. I've never seen a TED Talk end, like, and then that's it for me. You know? Like, it's just...
There's got to have a purpose.
Yeah, yeah. I think that I remember I attended an Ottawa TEDx event, and you were emceeing it. That was a couple years ago.
I did. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was more. It was much more business oriented.
Yeah.
There weren't stories like that. They were business oriented. Although Sekou Kabu was there. He's the track and field athlete. He had a great.
You know, what's so funny about him is he was great. He was one of my favorite talks. And then there's this app called Turo where you can rent people's vehicles and stuff like that. And he showed up on my driveway one day, borrowing my truck. So it's like, I think I saw you on stage once. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, he's got an interesting story.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it really is.
Another story about him is one Canada Day event.
For those that are listening, he's a track and field, a Canadian track and field athlete.
Did he go to the Olympics?
Yes.
I forget what that. So we're at this.
I'm gonna have to Google that right now to double check that. Yes.
He was doing a demo at this in this park during his Canada Day event, and he's jumping hurdles, and he's clearly an incredible athlete. But meanwhile, like I do like kickboxing on the side, just to stay in shape. And so I've got this shirt on called 100% Athlete, and then so I feel like an idiot because I'm just like a hobbyist guy who's just, you know, likes to work out from time to time. Meanwhile, you have this professional athlete who's probably gone to the Olympics and done crazy things, but I'm wearing this 100% athlete shirt. So I felt like an arsehole that day.
Well, it works. I love the fact though that you're active and you're healthy and you're doing things and you can appreciate the talent of an athlete and what they do. And I think too that if, you know, the roles are reversed, there's an appreciation for what it is that you do for the talent. The music, the writing, and being able to get up on stages and do something very different. But it's interesting. Any person that puts themselves up on a stage to be judged or to do something, it's a very scary place to be.
But there's metaphorical stages, right? You competed. You were an athlete. Your stage, you still have audience members watching you. I personally think that if you look at professional athletes, like that platform is much more scary than what I do. I mean, they're like, how can you go tell jokes in front of people? Like, what you do is worse. You have to do push-ups every day. Or, you know, if you screw up, you're messing up an entire team. Like, I'm accountable for myself.
Right. It's not like you've got the bookies in Vegas that are putting bets on.
Right.
You know, there's a different kind of an audience that's watching you. Where do you see things going now? How far into the rebuild are you? How far is life almost back to normal? Is it back to normal, would you say? Is there a new normal now after this?
Back in the house now. Just got the lawn hydro-seeded yesterday. So we'll have grass in the spring. And normal is... it'll never get back to normal, but we're excited to see what the neighborhood's going to look like. I mean, right now, again, the trees were why we moved there. There's no trees left. The neighborhood's called Arlington Woods. It's now called Arlington Stumps.
It really is. I hate to say it, but it is.
It looks like stumps. A new development. Like, it's just, we live in Barnhaven basically now. Anyway, so it's, again, so it'll never get back to normal, but we're looking forward to the next chapter and seeing what comes of everything.
Do you put as much emphasis on, or do you look at vacuuming the house or having to do chores around the house and sometimes go, why am I doing this?
No, I like cleanliness.
But just to remember that you had, you know, there was 20 minutes before a tornado hit, you were vacuuming the house. I don't know. So I guess maybe for me sometimes is I would prefer living life than having to fold laundry or having to do things. And sometimes I just make the choice. The laundry can wait or the dishes can wait and enjoy life a little bit more.
Yeah.
Do you have that sense?
I've always had that sense. And so anything that requires like daily maintenance is inconvenient for me because I like to explore. I like to research. I like to try to create. And do new things. So things like laundry, you got to do it. But daily maintenance, working out, laundry. I'll always have like a podcast on or something like that. Doing these, driving. You know, it just I'm always trying to absorb and learn while I'm driving, while I'm doing something that.
Were you looking for those things though while you were going through this? Like, where did you look for the sanity when you have everything in your life uprooted?
What do you mean?
Are you talking to people? I mean, I know that you're making videos, and I'm assuming that was really quite therapeutic. But who are you turning to say, my gosh, like, we've lost almost everything. I have nowhere to go. My half of my belongings are like, sprawled everywhere. There's trees in my house. I open my bedroom door, and all I see is the sky and a tree.
It hasn't hit me yet. And I think one of these days, like, I will probably need serious therapy. But right now, I seem to have just kind of coasted through. But I have my own coping mechanisms. I'm an adult. I've dealt with things, and so that's how I've done it. My 7-year-old, he has PTSD, so he's every time the it rains or the wind picks up, he kind of has moments. And so he's, you know, we've got him a therapist, which is great. As a child in Canada, he's covered by OHIP. Which is fantastic. So that would cost you and I like $200 an hour. So what I'm trying to do is trying to give him questions to ask so I can work some of my own stuff out through his benefits.
Right. Okay.
That's a joke. I'm actually doing that.
Can you go to the therapist and ask her, say that you're dealing with this issue, and then he comes out of there with a nice little answer for you?
Yeah.
From the therapist's office? Are you... That, I think that was more what I was asking, is there's the trauma after. And so you have your 7-year-old son... Who's dealing with?
He's trying to provide therapy for the rest of his family. He asked the therapist the other day if stress can cause an irregular menstrual cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And it does, apparently. So anyway, hopefully he'll get past this. The younger one, he was 4 when the tornado happens. Everything went over his head. He doesn't know what's going on in life. But
7-year-old would.
Yeah.
There was a fear of being grabbed by whoever was the parent that grabbed the favorite child. But there's a sensation that they went through something that wasn't normal.
And it's hard to explain to a kid that this is probably not going to happen again. Or, you know what I mean? Like, it never, 38 years of my life, it's never happened. So how do I explain to someone it doesn't happen because it's happened, you know, in at least 15% of his life. So there's no way to put his mind at ease other than just time.
And talking about it.
Mm.
So he's had the ability to say this, or you would have sensed sounds, weather, there's a reaction. Mm-hmm. And humor can't necessarily always fix it at that point.
Humor will distract him for a while, but at the same time, he's still, and then you figure it out, you can check the weather on an app. So now he's getting us to check the phone all the time. It's like, is it supposed to rain? Is it, was there a lot of humidity in the sky right now? Like, he knows more than J.J. Clark about the, you know, how the weather systems work. And I know he will overcome it, but for right now, it's not ideal.
No, I still see it as not enough time, I think, has passed right now. For you, though, getting back, are you going back on the comedy circuit? Will this be part of the comedy routine? I mean, there's one thing to do a TEDx talk, which I found was incredibly inspiring, to be honest, and to be able to look at things a little bit differently and say, okay, let's put a different perspective on the current situation. But can this type of a, can this be moved into the stand-up, into the routine?
Are you working on that? I still talk about it in stand-up, and it's evolved my stand-up. So even this last year, I did a Fringe Festival series called Tornado Troubles. So it was like an hour of me talking about what I've come to overcome it, a lot of jokes, a lot of there's videos. I played songs associated to tornadoes. I don't know, just messing around with that, and it was topical, so it was really well received. But as far as how it's affected me going forward, it's really affected the way I tell jokes now. Now that I know how to capture an audience with something topical or vulnerability, let's say, I'm trying to. I don't want to be that comic who tries to inspire people every time they go out. But if I could sort of leave them with some sort of a message every time I hit the stage, then I don't know. I think that's more beneficial than just leaving them with laughs.
And then how often are you interweaving a comedy, a music? Are you able to go and move from one to the other?
So what I'm doing is I do I have a one-hour theater show that I'm touring next year, going to like the middle of Manitoba, and, you know, just all over the place. And it's basically a combination of everything I do. So it's an hour of stories, songs, jokes, just basically trying to encompass everything I do into one small hour. I even do a little bit of parenting in there.
That's a lot to throw in.
Yeah, but
it's a lot of talents. I mean, a lot of people can't do that.
It's
I can't
unique.
Sing, and I'm not funny. I hope I'm a good parent, but
No, you're doing just fine. I'm pretty sure, but it's double-edged sword with that is that no one knows where to categorize you. So it's like, is he a musician or like how do we bill him?
And well, it's funny when I was trying to write the intro, I'm like, do we talk about country music? Do we talk about writing songs in Nashville? Do we talk about writing comedy? Talk about working with Canadian comics? I mean, you've done all of it. So do you feel a little bit lost? Like, where exactly do I fit into all of this?
I don't know where to go. I'm not the best comedian. I'm not the best country music person. I'm not the best this and that. But as far as combining them all together, I think I have a fighting chance at succeeding with that.
It works. They're woven into each other. Mm-hmm. And do you anticipate speaking more about this? Or do you think that there's a run to this tornado segment and these TED Talks and the dealing with humor? Or do you see it being a story that will affect people for a long time to come?
Speaking's my next thing. So I've already got a lot of opportunities. And so I'm crafting everything right now. So next year is going to be really busy with speaking events, which I'm really looking forward to. There's another example of me. I've spoken in front of audiences several times. I've performed in front of audiences several times, but right before that TED talk, I was nervous. I was like, really nervous because I've never spoken in front of an audience other than telling them jokes or, you know what I mean? The jokes were a defense mechanism when I'm in a comedy club, but on a stage where you're actually trying to give people information, that's a completely different beast. And I'm looking forward to adding that to my repertoire.
Well, that's what I thought was so amazing is to be able to take the snippets from the videos that you did and then turn it into something you could speak about. So when you're looking at doing more of these talks, what's the content matter? What's the subject?
A lot of it's vulnerability. And everything that I've done, like I possibly probably do this trying to gain the approval of others. You know what I mean? Whether it's acting out in class as a kid just to get the approval of my peers, or my dad was an entertainer. Maybe I went into it because of him, trying to gain his approval. I don't know. But there's that, and then we take all the vulnerabilities from this tornado ordeal, and that kind of, that's what ties it in. That's where all my lessons learned over the last 38 years have come together.
So that's the word you choose from this, is vulnerability.
I think that making the video is a way of putting a Band-Aid on my vulnerability. So everyone's like, you saw the video, even yourself, you're like, wow, you're so brave. How do you find the strength to do that in a time like that? Well, what I was doing is actually hiding how I really felt through jokes. So that's essentially what I'll be speaking about in these talks.
Okay, but were you sitting in a psychologist's office for them to realize that vulnerability was the critical word there?
Oh, again, I haven't had any therapy since this happened. My kid gets all the therapy.
I know that, but what you've just said is to understand that the fear was masked by a vulnerability. That word, I think, for a lot of people to be open about and express it, because it was really funny what you provided for everyone else, but it was your own fear inside coming through. Mm-hmm. So when you speak about vulnerability, are there other ways? Yours came out through humor. How when you speak about vulnerability, do you go inside, get authentic and honest, and then be able to share different stories with people? Did you see Brené Brown? Have you watched that?
Yeah, on Netflix.
What did you think of that, for those that might have seen that? A lot of it on vulnerability.
That was the first time I've actually seen Brené. She's a big deal, apparently, but I never heard of her until this Netflix thing. And it was great. She's a great storyteller. And anyone who can tell an honest story like that. And I think other people seeing someone be vulnerable and actually have the strength to share that vulnerability, that's encouraging enough. You don't even have to have a positive message, just as long as you show by example. Exactly.
She didn't have that many punchlines. You've got a lot more punchlines to work with.
That's my skill set. She's probably a lot more inspirational and well-spoken than I am.
She has science behind her.
She does. She's a researcher.
She's quite smart.
Yes, I don't have
but
that
But you're
either.
Quite funny. Yeah.
Thank you. I don't know if that's a compliment or a...
There was lots of compliments. I thought your music was great when we were doing things. I don't know.
You're funny, but she's pretty smart. Thanks. Thanks.
They're both compliments, wouldn't you say?
I am an Algonquin College graduate, I'll have you know.
Congratulations.
Yes.
You're from the city?
Yeah.
Where was high school?
You know what's funny about my education is it was around the 2000s. Remember when Ottawa was booming with technology and things like that?
Yes.
So I went into it thinking, I'm going to come out a millionaire. It's going to be amazing. And then as I was in school, technology crashed, and I did tech support for a while. So it's... and then technology changes so much. Like, I went to school to learn how to fix Windows 98 networks and things like that. And then XP came out and abolished my entire education. So I have no skills, but apparently I now have ideas worth spreading.
You do. I think your ideas are fantastic. I hope people take advantage of it or listen to it with a different perspective. But I think the challenge now is where do you go with it? We know you've got the music. And so you're saying that the conversation's shifting into a vulnerability aspect and people are wanting to hear you speak. So it's a big compliment. Mm-hmm. And that you'll face it.
Yeah, I hope so. So it's, that's the next chapter. So trying to explore how to express that vulnerability. The first one, again, like I said, was the, that album I released that was all about my own vulnerabilities. That's the one that hit the biggest for me. And so it was an enlightening moment in that anything I do from now on will try to be a little more authentic.
Are those that are closest to you, can they pick up the songs and what it's about and who it's for or what you're thinking about?
Yeah, like, you know, my mom will hear a song about a dark day. She's like, I don't like that song. I like it when you're happy. Okay.
On average, though, most songs are written usually when you're sad or when you're happy?
I don't know, 50-50.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But I, you know, try to show the positive spin. I remember right after the tornado, everyone, there's tons of calls from media. They wanted to get that picture of me in front of the house, in front of the broken house, me sad on my front lawn. I'm like, no, go take a hike. You're not getting that image of, you know what I mean? I want to portray exactly what I portrayed, the lighter side of things. So
the calling the hot tub repairman and
yeah,
changing the listing of the car from an SUV or something to a compact car. So you didn't want it reflected that way.
Yeah, I did. You know, I mean, and they had enough of that footage with other neighbors, so I didn't want to be the another sob story.
Where can people go? I'm hoping people can go and see these. I mean, I had links and a whole bunch of stuff, but where on YouTube, where people find this, or on your website, like where would people go to see more of you?
I've got a YouTube channel. Just search Rory Gardner. I mean, if you want to see the TED Talk, go search TEDx, Finding the Funny When Disaster Strikes. If you just Google my name, you'll have a tons of stuff.
But what's the actual title of the talk? Finding the Funny?
I think it's Finding the Funny When Disaster Strikes.
And it was out west, like in the States. It was like Seattle. Where exactly was it again?
Colorado.
Colorado. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I guess, I don't know, I guess I posted it online and then it got shared, you know, and then one person just picked it up around there.
It's amazing what happens when things go viral, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't realize it. I don't think you were meaning for it to go viral.
I literally just did it to make my neighbors laugh. I didn't realize it would be shared that often.
Do they appreciate the laughter that came from those moments?
They're sick of it, to be honest with you.
they're like, Rory, just shut up.
The 1 year anniversary was 2 weeks ago. And so I was asked to play at an event in the neighborhood, which was a lot of fun. And they'd ask, like, do you want to do your tornado shtick for us? I was like, no, it's a little too close to home for a lot of people. Like people like yourself and audience members, they love hearing about it. But when you've actually dealt with it yourself, it could be quite offensive, I'm pretty sure. So I just stuck to music that day.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
How for those that actually it hits closer to home.
When I say things like, yeah, the tornado was an inconvenience because I had just vacuumed like that. Yeah, I mean, I don't know offhand, but it would probably piss someone off who was actually in the eye of the tornado.
I think you're able to do it because there weren't casualties.
Right.
There were a couple of people in Dunrum who were physically harmed and hurt, but there were no deaths. I think it changes perspective a little bit.
I wouldn't have done this if I hadn't. Out of respect for anyone, I wouldn't have done any of this without if there was casualties.
But there was an opportunity to bring a different outlook into a situation. And I think people appreciated it. And I think at the time when you have something that goes viral 24 hours, there was a need for it. Do you look at it that way? For so many people, there was a need to just be able to let it out and let it either in a cry or in a good laugh. God, a good belly laugh. So, so therapeutic.
Right.
Do you find that?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good.
I hope people take the opportunity to look at the video. So RoryGardner.com,
yep.
One place. Mm-hmm. Finding the Funny, the TEDx talk. Finding the Funny.
When Disaster Strikes.
And I saw that there's a whole bunch of YouTube links if you're actually on the site. And you've got a thing on your music. You've got a thing on the comedy. I think it's a pretty neat combination.
I'm still trying to figure out which direction to go in. But yeah, it's...
But it'll guide you.
We're doing all of it. We're booked pretty solid, so I'm doing something right.
See, you're a working comedian and magician. Not magician, musician.
Imagine I did do magic.
Can you imagine the magic thrown in there also? Oh my God, we'd like have the cross, the three off the list. But as a musician and as a comedian, to be booked and to be speaking and have gigs, that's a sign of success.
Hopefully.
I would think.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you coming in. It was such a kind of... one of those weird passing each other at an event going, hey, what have you been up to? And then I had no idea the story existed, but so glad that I actually took the time to listen and to go through the stuff because I was really quite moved. I thought it was very, really well done.
Yeah, so, no, it was great running into you and I appreciate you looking at my stuff.
You're quite talented on all fronts. And so I hope it continues to grow. And I hope people enjoy the aspect of looking at things through humor on certain situations. Sometimes that's the only thing that's left to do. And I appreciated the thought process behind it. Hoping people will go and check that out. Also, please continue to go check this out and comment and like and subscribe to the podcast. There's, over 90 episodes that we're in right now, but it really helps as everyone continues to spread the word and share the content. And next time you're kind of dealt with an adversity. My goodness, I thought I could talk today, but I guess I really can't. To be able to think different ways of being able to handle it. And we are all vulnerable. So thank you for bringing it out to the forefront. It helps us all. Have a great day, everyone. We'll see you back here next week.
90 episodes. Wow.
It's said that the more time you have to invest, the greater the return. Well, guess what? Kids have the most time if we learn to invest early. That's why I created the Cash Kid Podcast, where I teach kids and some adults financial skills they need to know on how to earn, save, and invest their money. Join me on this journey as we interview experts and explore topics that allow you to grow your money as kids. This podcast will help you become the money expert among your family and friends. Just remember, anyone can be a cash kid. You just have to learn how to become one. Get ready to grow your financial knowledge and your wallet with the Cash Kid Podcast.